12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Freeman Sims, paranormal researcher, investigator, and host of the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. You are listening to Ghost in the Valley Podcast.
Today, I'd like to welcome back Eric Freeman Sims. Eric is the host of the Unseen Paranormal and the Strange Chapters podcast. He's also the co-producer of the Strangely Haunted documentaries. Eric has a new book just released, Small Town Haunts and Legends of Tennessee. Welcome back to the show, Eric Freeman Sims.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Al.
Yeah, it's been a crazy month we just talked about. I'm getting over the flu myself. And
I'm knee-deep in planning a paranormal expo. I got hired as the event coordinator for Goblin Con in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblin incident. So I'm knee deep in planning all that and getting speakers and vendors, building the website. So yeah, busy. And then putting the book out on top of that and everything else. Yeah.
What got you fascinated in the first place? I mean, in this field?
Yeah, I think I've always been into the weird stuff as long as I can remember when I was a kid. Cause I was that weird kid at the book fairs that would go looking for the Bigfoot and the alien books and like the alien posters when they had those book fairs that sold posters and all that stuff. And growing up, I was huge into aliens for some reason and had alien posters, black light posters all over my walls and stuff. And then, I saw a full body apparition when I was 8. I woke up out of a dead sleep and my door was open and there was a lady standing in the door and it scared me. So I jumped up and turned the light on, slammed the door. And, then when my dad died when I was 14, he was agnostic, and that's kind of how I was raised. So not really doing religion. And so believing in something beyond us, but not, you know, putting labels on it. So I kind of started going in search of, you know, where'd my dad go when he died? Was he still, you know, go to a different dimension or, you know, what just ceased to be nothing. So started going out and investigating different places, graveyards and things with my friends. And this is back in the 90s before the TV shows. So I didn't even know that people got together, you know, as a hobby and went ghost hunting and stuff, you know, until I was about 18 or 19. I didn't even know there were such things as like ghost hunters. I've been doing it ever since. So over 20 years now, 5 years ago, started the paranormal podcast, the Unseen Paranormal Podcast, when I retired from the medical field after 20 years.
Yeah, I seen that you started out, you was helping somebody else first in their podcast, right?
Yeah.
And that got you interested in starting your own?
Yeah, I started listening to podcasts way back in the day. I started listening to like Jim Harold and like Hillbilly Horror Stories and some of those that are kind of the biggest ones now. And when they were first starting out, kind of got into podcasts, cause I've always been interested in like the radio shows and stuff and like listening, you know, Paul Harvey stories and things like that. So I've always been fascinated with like your imagination. You have to use your imagination when you listen to, you know, to radio and just audio. Yeah. I reconnected with a friend from high school and she had a podcast and it had nothing to do with the paranormal. It was called Best Effing Friends. And it was her and a co-host, a friend of hers. And I just did all the behind the scenes stuff and produced it. And she taught me the podcast world, you know, of, getting a host to host your show and how to make money and things like that. And their show became pretty popular. It was, you know, pretty up there in, the social category on Apple and they got good reviews and stuff and did that for a few years. And then she decided to go in a different direction. She's always wanted to be an author and that gave her the opportunity, to stay at home and become an author. And so, then I decided, well, I have all the knowledge. I'm into the paranormal. I'm retired from the medical field. Mm-hmm. So I need to do something. So yeah, I started the Unseen Paranormal Podcast and here we are 5 years later and 170 something guests.
So, yeah, ain't that unreal?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like my wife said, you know, when you started podcasting, we started about the same time. I think I did like my first one was like 2018. But it was like of all the fields you could have chosen, like cooking or race cars or yeah. And you picked paranormal, you know.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I had three podcasts. I was starting out. I had one on mysteries, another one on music because I'm a musician. So I wanted to really highlight the independent musicians out there.
Yeah.
And the people that were in these bands, you know, once big time, like, you know, let's say the keyboard player from Steppenwolf. I mean, you don't hear about the guys that are in the band that were right. Behind the big stars. You know, what are they doing today? You know, and I couldn't get nobody to come on the show. You know, I'm trying to help these guys out, you know.
Yeah.
That was hard. So I dwindled down. I kept the paranormal one. And I've just always been interested in this field since, you know, like my book came out, you know, grew up in a haunted house, you know.
Yeah.
So ever since then, I've been fascinated, like big time, you know.
Which your book is amazing. And if anybody who's listening has not gone out and got it, you need to go get Al's book. It is wonderful. I had him on my show talking about it, and I've read the book. It's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm excited about the number so far. It was targeted for young adult, and I just had somebody 90 years old just text me the other day and says, I loved your book. I was, oh, okay, you know. But, yeah, is anything, you know, that's related to the paranormal welcome on your show?
No, my forte's always been ghost. That's kind of the field that I jumped in is researching and investigating the ghostly phenomena. But I kind of have people from all different walks. I'm very picky, and I say this saying I'm very humble too, because I'm very fortunate that I built my show up, that I have people who message me, I have publicists who message me and things with guests, and so I kind of have my picking now. But I've been picky because I want well-researched, well-educated people.
Uh-huh.
I don't want conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat craziness. And, you know, it's fine to get off in the weeds and kind of theorize about things if you're coming from an educated place.
Uh-huh.
But my show is always, because I'm a very matter-of-fact kind of scientific-minded guy, and I'm very skeptical. Everything that I do in the paranormal, I'm very skeptical. I just don't put anything out there. If I can, you know, in any way, shape, or form, debunk it, disprove it, then it's not, you know, paranormal. And so I've been very picky, but yeah, I've talked about everything on my show, but just being picky about the guests that I choose to come on and talk, because like I said, I don't like to get into the conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And the crazy,
mm-hmm.
you know, the crazy woo, as they call it in the Bigfoot world. You know, we can talk about the woo and talk about the, you know, the magicality of Bigfoot and fairies and things like that with somebody who's well educated and had done their research on the subject, you know, instead of just off the cuff, you know, this is what I think. This is my crazy ideas that I just come up with myself, you know, type of stuff. So just more credible guests, I guess.
That does play a big part, you know, the history. So I yeah. think that's why I like listening to your shows so much, just because, you know, I know you do a lot of work on getting the background of these places that you investigate, or
yeah.
The building or the land or the property, you know, because it's important to know what you're investigating. So that's why I give right. a lot of credit to like the Catholic priests go in to do the exorcisms. They don't just jump in there and do an exorcism. You know, they really do a thorough background on the person. Like, you know, if it's schizophrenia or problem or something there, they just can't jump in and say, okay, this is demonic, you know.
Right.
And you'll find, like, yeah, I think you said before, most of the stuff out there is not demonic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you have a pissed off spirit, or does not make them demonic.
Yeah, I have too. And my motto's kind of become, if you're an a-hole in life, probably mean a-hole in death. Why would, you know, if a spirit's still hanging around and hasn't kind of crossed over, why would their attitude change? You know, if they're old and old, grumpy curmudgeon, you know, and when they died, then they're, you know, especially if you're invading their space and they see it that way, you know, yeah, I've been cussed out and everything else and pushed, and I've never been scratched or anything like that. And I've never come across anything that I would say was demonic. I think there's a few things that I've come across throughout the years that may have not ever been a living being, like a human, maybe like an elemental or something like that. And they tend to be kind of nasty when you get in their space. And then especially Native American spirits tend to be very nasty because, justified. I'm not saying that it's not, you know, because we're building on their burial grounds and things like that. And so they have a reason. But yeah, I think it's important to know the history of the place to understand why the place is haunted. And even with my book, probably 75% of its history, you know, with the stories in there, as kind of the entertainment aspect of it. So hopefully people will learn something about Tennessee history that they never knew, because a lot of it is kind of more obscure history. And here in Tennessee, in high school, you have to take a Tennessee history class that is just Tennessee history. And a lot of the stuff, they don't tell you the stuff in there. They just hit the cliff notes and the major, right, major stuff. Like, you know, they want to talk about Andrew Jackson being the president, living here, you know.
You know, I found out more history on going to Gettysburg, you know, than I did in the history books.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt so moved.
A place like that, I think that you learn in history and is really revered because it was such a big part of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the main battle, you know, that you hear of. And when I went there, it was kind of surreal in a way, because you hear about Devil's Den and places like that. Mm-hmm. But then when you go and see it,
a lot of these people didn't die from just being in a battlefield. They died also from the disease, you know, and cold and
And seeing the bullet holes in the houses downtown. Mm-hmm. But also looking at like pictures online, there are people who've done, especially with Gettysburg, where a picture right after the battle with the actual body still there. Mm-hmm. And then I was just there standing in that same spot, you know, and 170 years ago, whatever, somebody who gave their life that was probably 17 or 18 years old, you know. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think that's crazy. Kind of, like I said, surreal to go there, especially in the paranormal community, is very revered as well, even though they don't let you investigate. And like if you get caught with, what is it? I think EMF detectors and REM pods, they'll kick you off the property.
So. It was just funny. Like I always said before, you know, spirit will pick and choose who they want to connect with.
Well, and I've always been respectful of the spirits because I just looked at it like, you know, if you're coming to my house and you start yelling at me or being disrespectful, I'm not going to be very nice to you either. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, probably not going to have a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. But owning a location now for the past almost year, I have an even more of a respect, especially for other location owners, because I become very protective of the spirits that are in the house that I own, the night house. And so just another like level up of respect, you know, because they're not performers. They're not circus performers, you know, and I go in there and talk to them and thank them, you know, for talking to teams that come in. Or when I do an investigation, we just had our first public investigation and I was leading one of the groups and, you know, just thanking them for talking to us and just telling them, you know, we come out of respect and we want to tell your story. That's why we're trying to talk to you and get you to communicate with us, because we want your story straight from you. You know, history only takes you so far, reading it in the history books or ancestry.com or newspapers.com or whatever. Especially with the night house, I found myself really gravitating towards, instead of I know all the numbers, I know all the dates and all the people's names when they died and things like that, but I've found myself gravitating more towards evidence of their personalities. Mm-hmm. Of learning what type of people they were, because it's very easy to make them two-dimensional on paper and just a bunch of dates and names. But then when you find newspaper articles about them being part of the debate society or, you know, selling these prize goose eggs or something, you know, it kind of tells you a little more about their personality and what type of people they were.
So you and your husband bought this house, right? You said it was haunted house.
Yeah.
You don't mind sharing the house with the spirits, right?
Well, we don't live in the house. We still live in our house. Oh, we've had
for years. Did you get the house to do investigations out of?
To do not just investigations. The house has always been a residence for 200 and some years. It was built in 1815, and it's always been a residence, a private residence. And so it is the oldest still standing structure in that county, in Christian County, Kentucky, in Hopkinsville, and in the top 20 oldest structures still standing in Kentucky itself. So, and the family that lived there, the Knight family that lived there for 85 years, they were a very influential family, but the house has never been open to the public, and it's 5,600 square foot mansion. I mean, it's massive, and it has these giant white columns on the side, you know, and it just has this presence up on this hill, and all these people are curious about it. And so part of it was also saving the house. Mm-hmm. We were the only ones that came along and actually made an offer on it. The owners have been trying to sell it for 2 years. And so we wanted to come in and open it to the public for not just the paranormal, but also history tours. The good thing about paranormal tourism is that it helps pay the bills. History really doesn't. I mean, $10 a tour for a history tour for an hour and a half, it really doesn't pay the bills. It's the teams that come in, and I'm so thankful for them, who come in and rent the house out overnight and spend the night in the house. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really the ones that help us not only pay the bills, but also put money back into the house to restore it, you know. And so that's what we're all about, is the restoration and to put this house more on the map as a historical site. Mm-hmm. And we actually got the city council, it's the board of zoning adjustments, to rezone the property from residential to a historical landmark. And so we can have events there and things like that now, ticketed events and things like that. So it's about working with the community too, and getting it out there. There's so many people in that community who are curious about the house because they've driven by it their entire lives, but never been in it. And so now they have the opportunity to do that, or they can go online and watch videos of, you know, us renovating and videos of a walkthrough, things like that. So a lot of people are curious about it, but yeah, it's more about the 80% of it was about the history. The other, you know, the other 20% is the paranormal. The paranormal just happens to be there.
Kind of, did you know it was a haunted before you bought it?
We had that feeling when we went and looked at the house. The house is very welcoming, and that's the one thing that kind of everybody says, that the house just kind of welcomes you. You just feel at home there. I mean, to the point that when we have teams in there, they're like going in, teams that are spending the night, they go put their pajamas on and they're walking around barefoot and socks, you know, and their slippers. That's how they just automatically do that, because they just feel comfortable in the house. Mm-hmm. My husband, he really doesn't do the paranormal. He loves the history. And that's why he, you know, agreed to go on this crazy venture with me to buy this house. But even he said, you know, it felt like somebody was watching us kind of when we were looking at the house. And we were the only ones in the house. The realtor wouldn't go in the house. She stayed outside. So we didn't know for sure if it was haunted, but I mean, a 200-year-old house with that many people and one family that lived there who most of the kids were born and died there, you know, for 85 years. Another family owned it for 65 years.
Yeah, like the house I grew up in, you know, it burned down. So yeah. It was hard. It's hard getting the history on it. And my wife and I, we go to the library like, you know, once every 2 weeks, and we do some research on the home, yeah. Trying to get just from the people that used to live there. I have to go through like the old telephone books even. It would give the people that lived there and their occupation, what they did. And so then I'll do the background sit check on the people. But I know that I went back, I think we're back to 1928 right now. So
yeah,
communities get rid of these records, you know,
right.
Or a street will have changed its name. It wasn't called this back then.
Right. Right.
I just listened to a couple of your old episodes today.
Yeah.
On the Unseen podcast. And I love learning on this show. You know, that's one of my biggest joys, is I find out stuff that I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like I knew on the show I listened to today, I can't remember her name. She was on your show. She's talking about the Black Eyed Kids. I knew about the Black Eyed Kids. I had some guests on here before, and my friend of mine had a connection with the Black Eyed Kid, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about the White Eyed Kids.
Yeah, that was Jim and Jade. She wrote a book. Yeah.
That was my first one today. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had never heard of them either until I heard her on the show, until I read her book and then had her on the show. Yeah, mm-hmm. And the Black Eyed Kids stuff, there's not a lot out there about it. I remember hearing about it back in the day, and it fascinated me from the get-go, because mm-hmm. It's just this out there thing that people are reporting. But I think I heard it back in the day on Art Bell. There was a guest on who had written a book and was talking about it and telling stories. And then, so there's not a lot out there about it. And then my friend Steve Stockton, who's been on the show many times, he actually had an encounter with Black Eyed Kids back in the 80s. And he's told it on my show, actually in Knoxville, Tennessee, when he lived out there. When she wrote the book, I was like, oh, yeah. Because I've had Jim and Jay's been on my show quite a few times, too. And when she wrote the book, I'm like, as soon as it came out, I messaged her. And I'm like, I read your book. It's amazing. You got to come on and talk about, you know, Black Eyed, also the White Eyed Kids, which is even right. Weirder, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the other podcast you have? You have the Strange Chapters. I think I listened to her also, because I guess I was on a Black Eyed Kid thing today.
Yeah. Strange Chapters I did for a while. I've kind of put it on the back burner with finishing the book up and all the other stuff I have going on. There are quite a few episodes though, but Strange Chapters is, I started it because everybody, I get so many comments on my voice and people want me to narrate stuff and I just don't have time to do other people's stuff. So every once in a while, I will holler at one of my author friends who I've become friends with through the show, through the Unseen Paranormal, and say, hey, can I, you know, narrate a couple of chapters out of your book? These are the chapters I'm interested in or whatever. Or I'll have them send me chapters, mm-hmm. and I'll narrate them and put them up under Strange Chapters. Yeah, and just as a way to, another way to help them get their books out there, but also for people to hear more, because it's just straight up weird stories, you know. And with Strange Chapters, I do some true crime stuff too, like weird disappearances and things like that. And I wanted to do Strange Chapters as well to get outside of just the paranormal, because I'm also interested in true crime and lots of other topics too. So anything weird and strange and high strangeness, you know, weird disappearances, the missing 411 stuff, all of that.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of allows me to get outside of that one niche of just paranormal with, you know, UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, cryptids, things like that.
Yeah. I love learning on this show, and I found out what a woodworker was last year. I knew Bigfoot and Sasquatch, you know.
And that's where the term boogeyman comes from.
You think I would know that because my all the coolies are down in Alabama. You know, I never, you know, all this time on this show, I never heard it called that.
Yeah, I live close enough to Appalachia in Middle Tennessee. You know, we're kind of at the foothills.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, woodbugger, that's where the term boogeyman comes from, too.
Mm-hmm, right.
It somehow got changed to boogeyman. But they used to tell their kids in Appalachia the woodbugger's going to come get you. And they were talking about Bigfoot creature. If you don't go to bed, you know, the woodbugger's going to come get you. And then also the other one I found interesting is the Wampus Cat. You ever heard of Wampus Cat?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So there's like 30 something colleges across the United States that have the Wampus Cat as their mascot. But that's where we get the term cattywampus from. And a Wampus Cat is said to have six legs. So it looks like a mountain lion, but it's got six legs. And so somehow they started describing it as being cattywampus because it's a cat with six legs. So with Wampus Cat and a cat, it just became cattywampus.
On one of your latest episodes, I was like heartbroken. I found out you said you're going to be stepping away from podcasting, you know, and then, and then you came back on and said you changed your mind. What, were you just having a moment there or?
Yeah. My show is kind of on hiatus right now. I was going to come back at the end of February. I don't know if that's going to happen with the book because it looks like I'm going to be busy with the book and then with Goblin Con stuff. So sometime this year, I will be back with Unseen Paranormal. But people are still discovering the show. My downloads are still pretty good on Spreaker. They're still paying me. So that's a good sign that people are listening.
It's in my library. I listen to it when it comes out, you know, and I have like maybe 10 or 15 I really listen to. Die Hard. Yours is one of them, you know. And I've had some numbers here. Like when I started out in 2018, approximately they're saying 350,000 podcasts out there. That was 2018.
Yeah.
2025, I just downloaded the records that it was 6 million.
Yeah.
So, all right, from 350,000 to 6 million. Here's what blew my mind, though. 95% of the new podcasters never make their second year.
And I think it was like a couple of years ago, I saw a study that Apple did. And this is the reason why Spotify and Apple will not put your show on their platforms until you hit so many episodes or so many downloads. Because they said that the majority of people that start a podcast will never make it past episode 7. They'll never make more than episode seven episodes. Mm-hmm. I think like 70-something% of people who start podcasts.
Yeah, it's 95, but 95 here for 2 years. So that probably makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the things I've seen, and this is not a slight on anybody or talking smack about anybody, but I think a lot of people jump into it not knowing how much work it is that we put into doing it. And the time that you put into it, in editing and marketing and, you know, social media and all that stuff. Recording is the fun part, you know, talking to the people recording is the fun, easy part. It's the, negotiation of scheduling. That's the worst thing to me is scheduling because, you know, things happen sometimes, but also then you're dealing with different time zones across the world, you know, cause I talk to people from Malta to, you know, Australia to England. And I've had nights where I was up at 3 a.m. recording a show because Australia, you know.
Yeah, we both have Warren and Juice on the show, you know, it's like
and Malta.
Multi coast and then I've had just last 3 out of 5 podcasts are from Scotland, UK and Ireland. So it's like and they're 5 hours ahead. Yeah. So I have to watch, you know, my time, their time. And that's scheduling and your one man show and you're doing all your own work and your equipment and everything, you know, and shit happens. Yeah. Like even your power goes out or storm rolls through.
And the internet being picky in StreamYard or whatever.
Right.
But I think a lot of people don't understand how much work it actually takes. And I think that's a compliment to people like me and you that we make it look easy just because we have done it for so long for one. And also that, we just have a level of quality that we put into our show and make sure our show is the quality that they are, you know, because I know you're very into, you're as much anal about the quality as I am.
I am.
I mean, there's shows I haven't put out because the quality just wasn't there. I think the other thing that people don't understand is that it takes a while to build your downloads up, you know, and I don't have millions of downloads. I think I just hit 200,000 downloads in 5 years, almost 5 years.
That's great.
And I'm happy with those numbers. You know, I think that's awesome. It blows me away to think that I have, you know, a few thousand people a week that listen to my show, you know, and the fact that now my goal when I started, I never had any numbers in mind. Mm-hmm. I thought if anybody listens to my show, That's, you know, that's good. The only number that I ever had in mind, the only thing I ever had in mind was I want my show to pay for itself. Uh-huh. I don't want to pay hosting fees. I'm not going to get rich off podcasting. I always knew that, but I wanted it to pay for itself. And so I hit that mark a couple of years ago when I went to Spreaker. I got invited as a preferred podcast and I don't have to pay them. They pay me through mm-hmm. ads. And so I hit that milestone a couple of years ago. And then, yeah, here not too long ago, we hit 200,000 downloads. And so in top 2% in the world or some crazy like that. Mm-hmm. So the numbers just blow me away. I'm so thankful to have the loyal audience that I have. And also the loyal audience that I've built of those couple thousand people that listen all the time, they'll all come back, which is the mm-hmm. awesome thing. When I start putting out new episodes, you know, in a few months, they will all come back. And so I'd rather have that type of audience than have, you know, it'd be nice to have 100,000 downloads a month or something like that and get paid yeah. more money. But how many of those people are really that loyal, you know?
Yeah. Most of your podcasters are, they're not making money, you know, like you, I'm making enough that it pays for my annual fees. If it was for the money, man, I've been out a long time ago. But
the, right. Yeah. My other thing was, I've always told my audience, I've always been just honest and open with them of that I will do it until it's no longer fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
I am severely ADHD and have been my entire life. I do not take meds for it. My parents would never let me. They said, you will learn how to deal with it and you will make it your superpower. And I have, because I can have 10 projects going on at once and they will all be done at 110%. If something is not fun for me, I cannot make my brain want to do it. And it's ADHD, a thing in the ADHD community is known as chasing the dopamine, because we have a lack of dopamine and we have to do tasks that gives us dopamine because your brain's addicted to it. It's the happy chemical. And so, that's one reason I'm taking a break from the podcast was that it started to become more of a chore, you know, than it did fun. So, but I'll be back with it and talk to a lot more people. And also this time of year, there's not a lot of, it's harder to find guests this time of year because there's not a lot of books coming out and, you know, things going on. People take breaks during the wintertime. And
mm-hmm.
so it's a lot easier, you know, in the warmer months to get people to come on and have content too.
Let's get into your book. Cause by the time this episode comes out, the book's going to be out. And, so what's the book without, in a nutshell, without giving too much away, what's the book about?
So, Small Town Haunts and Legends of Tennessee. And I called it Small Town Haunts and Legends because there are lots, you can go and easily find information on hauntings in Nashville or Memphis or Knoxville, or Chattanooga, all the major cities in Tennessee. And I'm a native Tennessean. And so I wanted to know about the places that you don't hear of. The places that aren't open for paranormal investigations, but have this amazing history and these stories of hauntings. And also kind of coming from the stance of storytelling, because in Appalachia, you know, storytelling is important. And to the point they even have every year they have a storytelling competition in Appalachia. And so the story's handed down, you know, from generation to generation. And that's where we get wood booger and, you know, things like that. Like we were talking about the Wampus Cat and, Spearfinger, which is a Cherokee legend, and even some of the Bigfoot, you know, folklore and stuff, has been handed down in stories. And so I think it's important to continue that storytelling, but put it in a context of, like I said earlier, with interesting history that people have never heard of about locations, but then entertain with the stories of the hauntings. Some of the stories are true, or probably true, from eyewitnesses. Some of them have become folklore. And in the very beginning of the book, I have two quotes, and one of them is from a movie called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old Western. It's got Jimmy Stewart in it. And there's a quote in there that for whatever reasons always kind of resonated with me, but there's a newspaper guy that says in there, when the legend becomes fact, print the legend. And what he means by that is instead of printing facts, if the legend is a better story, you're going to print the legend. And so that's kind of the approach of my book too, of like, I don't know if, you know, half the stories in there are true about the hauntings. Now all the history is correct as best of my knowledge of, you know, trying to research it and all that stuff and dates and all that. But as far as the stories of hauntings, they're just really good stories. You know, they're just entertaining mm-hmm. and there are probably truths to some of them. And like I said, there are eyewitness accounts in there. A lot of the stories come from people that actually seen things, but coming from a place of storytelling and entertaining in that way, but also hopefully teaching some people about history that they never heard or never would have been taught, or, you know, some more obscure type of history and some more interesting characters from history too.
you try to keep it as true as possible. Like you were saying before, you know,
yeah,
you don't
have
a bunch of bullshit on your show that, they don't, people don't research, or they just talk on hearsay. So-and-so said this through so-and-so. You know, I like to get, I'm taking the people's word for it's on the show, you know, that this actually happened to them, you know, cause just like my word in my book, you know, I know what happened to me. I'm not one of these people where everywhere I moved, the house was haunted. It just didn't happen, you know? So it was one and done for me there, you know, but I still get the chills. I go by that property to this day, you know? So when I did my book signing, we had an annual ghost walk in our town, this past October. And I was blessed, you know, cause they asked me to be there. And, I was sitting at the spot where you read about the log cabinets in my book or the courthouse. And I'm sitting there looking at the log cabin.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the courthouse. I'm at the corner church right there, you know, in Warren, Ohio, where the ghost walk starts out at. And I'm like, oh my God, the book I'm holding is this area. So
it was
cool to me to have people walk up to me that knows the area and told me stuff that I didn't know, you know, about, that area. So, so I'm taking people's word for it that, they're, and like yourself, you know, when you're doing the legends of, you know, Tennessee, you're saying some folklore. So, and that can be changed through, like you say, a better story.
Now, if somebody made up the story, it wasn't me. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Right. Like the stories in there, I didn't make up. It's all from research and reports and things.
I'm going to get your book when it comes out, cause it sounds really interesting, you know?
Yeah. And it'll be out, on all different formats, especially on Amazon. I've even got it in hardback coming out, which I actually got a proof copy, just to make sure that, you know, all the formatting and stuff is good and to get a look at it. And I did a bigger font in the hardback. And the thing I didn't realize when I took it around to, like, even my dad, my real dad, who's still living, he's 65 and he's like, oh, I want the hardback cause it's bigger print and I can read it. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to, you know, that's how I'm gonna have to promote the hardback of, like, you know, I didn't even realize that. Well, that's going to help people, older people or whatever, you know. And the book is available on a Kindle Unlimited, in paperback and hardback on Amazon. And then I'm also going through Ingram Spark to distribute it to libraries. And it'll be available to bigger places like Target and Apple eBooks and things like that through Ingram Spark. So. That'll probably be later on, maybe probably in another month or so before that's out there. So
you think about doing like an audio book on it or?
Yeah, I'm going to narrate an audio book myself. That'll be out later on this year just cause they're a little more nitpicky, for Audible and stuff for audio books. And it has to be a certain format. You got to read it a certain way.
Right.
Stuff, so, and, the way I wrote the book, it's kind of, I wanted it to kind of be, in a format of like the old bathroom books or, You know, before we had cell phones, a lot of people don't remember that, but you'd actually read things in the bathroom instead of have a phone while you're on the toilet, you know? Right. And, but like the old coffee books, and you just sit on a coffee table and you can pick them up and just read a couple stories in 5 minutes and put it back down type of deal. So that's how the book is formatted. And so the table of contents is set up almost like a reference book. I start out with the legends as the first section, and then, Tennessee is divided into West, Middle, and East Tennessee. And so then I divided the book that way as well. And then it's broken down into towns. And then there may be multiple locations I wrote about in each town, each of these small towns. So there's a little bit of a history blurb about the town itself, how it was founded, why it came to be type stuff. And then it goes into the individual locations, history, and then the hauntings.
This is your first book?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about doing one on some of your investigations you've been on?
Yeah, I've thought about that. I think probably the next book that I write, that I'm being pushed to write, I'm actually going to co-write it with my friend, Sin Schrader Hill.
I love her, man. She's like, great.
She did the forward in my book and she edited the book for me. So she's amazing. I love her to death. She actually just did the public ghost hunt with me at the Night House as a guest investigator, but she's pushing me to do a book on the Night House, the history and the hauntings of it this year. And I told her I would only do it if she would co-write it with me. So, I think we're going to do that here in a few months. Yeah, I don't know about my own exploits. I don't look at them as that interesting, I guess. I guess they are. And I may, I've thought about it, but I don't know. I guess I just don't think my stories are that interesting. I guess other people do because I come on shows all the time, you know, and talk about my stories and what's happened to me. But So yeah, that may be in the future, but I would like to continue the Small Town Haunts and Legends series. And, the next one in the series will probably be Kentucky, since I own a house in Kentucky. And, there's lots of places people have never heard of in Kentucky that have interesting history and ghost stories and things like that. So.
No, Kentucky does that haint blue too, don't they?
Yeah.
Cause I know Alabama and Tennessee and a lot of the southern states, you know, and that's how I got that haint blue tea in my book I wrote, you know, cause my grandmother had the haint blue, you know. I don't know what that was, you know. But then I've had people on the show tell me, you know, you paint their houses and porches and, you know.
We even found an old porch at the night house that's actually like a hallway now. It used to be a porch. And we found remnants of haint blue in there where it was the outside porch. And there's a door and windows there. But it got enclosed at some point in time. And but there's, haint blue. That was on the porch ceiling to keep the bad spirits out.
You said you didn't know if you believed in luck so much as bank at your own opportunities.
Yeah. I think it takes a lot of you putting yourself out there and being uncomfortable in situations to kind of make your own breaks in a way. I think that's how I've come along. I mean, even the getting into like becoming the event coordinator for GoblinCon, which is going to be this huge expo. A 2-day expo with pair celebrities and all these speakers and workshops and panels and things. A couple of years ago, I guess 3 or 4 years ago, I threw myself out there by doing my first small convention in Lebanon, Tennessee. We had about 200 people show up, you know, we had about 25 vendors, a few speakers. It wasn't nothing big, but I learned a lot about putting on a event like that. And I had done events before by just jumping in. And also I was a karaoke and wedding DJ for 20 years. Cause if you work in EMS, you probably have more than one job if you work as a medic on the ambulance. And so, my second job was always DJing, karaoke. And I did trivia, hosted trivia and did weddings and things. So I learned a lot about putting events on there too. And I've done lots of charity stuff like charity golf tournaments I put together over the years and things. But I think I created my own luck in a way by just jumping in feet first. And then if I fail, I fail, but at least I learned. And so that first convention that I jumped in and did with the 200 people, well, in 2023, I jumped into the even bigger pool and did Tennessee Haunts and Legends Expo at the Nashville Fairgrounds. That was 90 vendors, a full day of speakers. You know, it cost $28,000 to put it on, and no money came out of my pocket. We did a bunch of public ghost hunts, and we still ended up, we broke even and actually was able to give $5,000 to charity. And that was the goal. The goal wasn't to get rich. It was to put on the expo that people enjoyed, and it was a success. And so that led me here, you know, a couple of years later being the event coordinator for GoblinCon and getting paid for it. That's what I mean by your make your own luck is that, you know, by not being afraid to just put yourself out there. Cause if you fail, at least you learn something. I write in the book, is the single most difficult creative thing I've ever done. And I'm a really creative person. I mean, I produce all the videos that you see on my Facebook channel, like the GoblinCon videos I got there now, the trailers and things. I do all that myself. I wrote the voiceover script and stuff, but it scared the shit out of me to write a book and put it out there for people to judge. And now I'm kind of more okay with it now that it's coming out, but I'm still a little nervous about how people are going to receive it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's how I was at first, you know, it's like, yeah, because I've been in the music business and I had my own video business for 20 years. Yeah. So I know the video editing and all that. And I was like, I'm going to pay somebody else to do my video trailer. And I could do that myself, you know, right. but you know, being in the that business of the music, you know, I seen the cutthroats out there and being made promises to and broken promises and the video and the licensing and the copywriting. And I know all that, you know, but the writing a book, you know, the editing, you know, so, you know, I learned that was a big learning curve for me. I mean, the hardest part to me is the marketing.
Yeah.
So I hope you have best of luck with the book. And
thank you. I think one of the things I'm going to come up against that I have in the past when I've just, cause I help run a page called Tennessee Hauntings that has like, I don't know, 20,000 people or something on it. Occasionally I'll put stories up there from Tennessee, the same as my partner, Alan, that helps run the page. Alan Searcy, he's a paranormal author. I've had people blowback of people saying, well, that's not how I heard the story. I'm from there, from that town or whatever. And so I think there's going to be some of that with this book, but I had to take the different versions of stories and condense it to one, you know what I'm saying? And so I think that's going to be some of the comments I probably get. It's like, you know, well, I'm from Huntsville, Tennessee, and that's not how, you know, the story goes or whatever, you know, but that, well, that's just how you heard it. It doesn't mean that's, you know, how the story goes. So that, I had to be comfortable with that, I think, was the biggest thing of people saying, you're not telling a story right, you know. Well, it's just a story, you know. So
where can people go to get a hold of you or get the book?
The two main places you can find me, the main place is Facebook. Eric Freeman Sims on Facebook. My page is a public page, so anybody can find it if you search. And then also The Night House. I have a Night House page on there. The Night House in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And then the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. Those are my three main pages on Facebook. I have an Instagram and a X page, but I really don't use them that much. The other place is thenighthouseky.com. That's all the Night House stuff, all the renovations, the hauntings, all that stuff is on there. But yeah, the best place to get a hold of me is through Facebook. The book will be available, like I said, through Amazon and all the different formats on there. Kindle Unlimited and paperback and hardback.
I'll put those links at the bottom of this episode wish the best of luck. And I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Alan. It's always fun.
Thank you, Eric Freeman Sims. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And please check out Eric's sites on Facebook, Eric Freeman Sims, The Night House in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and the Unseen Paranormal Podcast, all on Facebook, and also thenighthouseky.com, and Small Town Haunts and Legends of Tennessee is available on Amazon in paperback, hardback, and Kindle Unlimited. Eric Freeman Sims is also the event coordinator for the Goblin Con Paranormal Expo in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, on October 17th and 18th. Vendor spots are still available. Again, that's on October 17th and 18th in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. All the links will be at the bottom of this episode. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghost in the Valley Podcast. Oh, 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 oh